Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. My name is Rob Bartlett, and thanks for joining us. For this episode, I'm joined all the way from Rio de Janeiro in Brazil by Gilsa Monteiro. Gilsa has a bachelor's degree in chemical engineering and a master's degree in nuclear engineering, and also in 2020 completed her PhD in nuclear engineering. And if all of that was not enough for academic credentials, she's also working to get her MBA. Welcome, Gilsa. Anything to add to this intro?
Hi, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here. So thanks a lot for this opportunity and congratulations for this podcast. I think you all have been doing an amazing job with this podcast, promoting high quality discussions on relevant process safety. I think you had a few words to introduce myself, and I think it's important for the listeners to know that I have been working in the oil and gas industry for nearly 19 years now. So I have been working in a major oil and gas company. And during this period of time, Robbie, I had the chance to be in different positions in this company. So at the very beginning, I worked within a business area, working very close to operational teams of some offshore production platforms. Then I got a position in the basic engineering design team, leading PAJs, HAZOP analysis, LOP analysis during the basic engineering design phase for both the upstream and downstream sectors of the company. And finally, I got a position at the Process Safety Corporate Center. And through this whole experience, Rob, I could see problems, safety issues, and decision-making processes from different perspectives. And I could realize how some organizational factors influenced on the way we did things in the company. And I got fascinated about this topic. And one of the organizational factors that highly influenced on the way we did things in the company was the organizational structure, which is the topic I'd like to address with you today.
Okay, I think that that's perfect. I think your experience is fantastic for taking a look at how organizational structure, I know you've also done some studies related to organizations, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you about how these can impact process safety. And on this podcast in the past, you know, we tend to spend a lot of time talking about PHAs or management of change or doing audits and all those sorts of things, all very specifically related to compliance with PSM and RMP requirements. We spent less time talking about some of the softer issues related to process safety. And I think organizational structure is a big piece of that that often gets overlooked. Yet I think that there's a big piece of the puzzle for preventing significant incidents and the fatalities and other casualties that come with those from happening. So today we'll be talking about that. And I think where I want to start is when we talk about organizational structure, I know that part of your thesis is related to the level of centralization or decentralization in a company. So what do you mean by a decentralized structure or decentralized decision-making process?
Yeah, I think that it's important to start by defining what I mean by structure. And by an organizational structure, I mean the set of positions and lines of reporting and lines of accountability that are typically depicted in the organizational chart. And we can realize how the structures influence on the information flows across the company. Structures highly influence what we communicate and what we don't communicate. The position occupied by an individual in the organizational chart defines the power and the authority that he or she will have to make decisions. The organizational structure works as a kind of a frame of reference to the employees, depicting how the work processes have been designed, how the decision-making processes will be made, who will be involved, who will be consulted. Structures, in the end, are a great distribution of power. So they define, they establish the power that individuals will have to influence in the final decision. So this is what I mean by structure. And my main argument here is that a decentralized structure may undermine process safety. So I think that this first question is a very interesting one, because what do I mean by decentralization? And by decentralization, I mean the distribution or the dispersion of decision-making autonomy within the company. So let me give you an example. In a decentralized structure, decisions are made as far as possible at the local site, at the process facility, at the business unit, rather than at the head offices at the corporate center of the company. So in other words, decisions are transferred to these local assets, and the asset manager, the plant manager, comes to possess all the authority to decide all the aspects related to the operations, which comprise schedules, production, costs, and safety. So that's the idea of a decentralized structure. So when you see the company looks like a set of individual companies that are linked together by a corporate center that establishes some general rules, some general standards, and goals to be pursued by these assets. But the decision-making autonomy is given to these plant managers. And of course, in terms of economical or financial considerations, there are lots of advantages in the decentralization process. So if you think that resolving matters at lower levels is faster, this is a very great economical consideration. And you can think that in a decentralized company, the assets, they can look for solutions and local providers that are faster and cheaper. So in terms of economical considerations, you can conclude that decentralization has so many advantages. But in terms of safety, there are some disadvantages that we need to be aware of.
Okay, so just to summarize what you're saying, there's been a lot of push, I don't know, over the last 30 or 40 years, decentralization, push decisions down to the lowest level possible. That has given a lot of autonomy to business units or potentially plants or facilities themselves to make decisions across the gamut, you know, as you mentioned, from scheduling or personnel, or in this case, in our case, what we're talking about here is process safety. And so it's those sorts of decentralized organizations that you are most concerned about here, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so let's get specific. So in my company, you know, we deal with a lot of different types of organizations, and, you know, they run the gamut from still some very quite centralized companies all the way through what you're talking about, which is basically a loose association of businesses that are only really connected via legal and accounting principles, you know? So we see all sorts along the continuum from centralized to decentralized. What are the specific dangers of a decentralized structure that concern you?
Yeah, I think there are two main aspects I'd like to emphasize here. And one of them is, let me pose you a question. In a decentralized company, how to ensure that the concepts, the standards, the safety rules that have been established at the top of the organization are being correctly interpreted, assessed, and even applied in each one of the process facilities. So if the structure allows for decision making solely at the asset level, and if this structure does not provide any upward flow of information to the head offices, variations in the practices adopted among the different process facilities are almost inevitable. So all of this increases the chance that the practice adopted in some part of the company might be substandard. And at this moment, Rob, you can interrupt me and say, oh, come on, wait a minute. I have an auditing process to verify what is happening in each one of these process facilities. But there is no guarantee that your auditing or inspection activities will identify any substandard practice before it can contribute to an adverse event. So I'm not saying that a decentralized company cannot produce safe outcomes, but they are more likely to experience in some part of the company a substandard practice. So this is a point that people need, leaders especially, need to be aware of.
I just wanted to go further into that point, because what you said about audits, that's what many types of decentralized companies that I've got experience with, that is how they operate. Well, we set the standards and then we audit to make sure people are doing them. But what you're saying is that, okay, you may be doing the audit, but you're not, number one, you're not guaranteed to find them. And number two, when you audit, you're only auditing a small amount of either the facility or maybe the number of facilities that you have in your organization. And I would throw a third thing in there, which is, you know, let's say you have an auditing structure that means, you know, you go and you take a look at what the facility is doing once every 3 years, once every 5 years, depending on how big you are, then you've got very few data points there to be able to actually draw strong conclusions. So does that kind of play into what you're saying?
Exactly. I think that you could make a summary raising some specific points that reinforce my argument that although you have an auditing activity, you cannot ensure that you're going to find out any substandard practice that is being adopted before it can contribute to an adverse event. And I'm not sure, Rob, if you have ever seen that. For example, sometimes your auditing, internal auditing process is not able to find out a substandard practice, but then you have the regulator and the regulator goes to one of your process facility and everything is okay. You will handle a process safety problem in a very good way. And then the same regulator goes to another process facility of the same company. And then the regulator finds a similar safety-related issue being managed in a completely different way and maybe in a substandard way. So I have seen that before. And I think that we can connect to this kind of situation that I'm telling here. If you can look at the structure of the company, there's a great likelihood that we are talking about a decentralized company when something like this happens. So I think that this is a good example that connects us with this point, this aspect that I'm trying to raise as one potential danger of a decentralized structure.
So let's bring this kind of this theoretical, you know, discussion about decentralized or centralized companies back to actually real life here. So I do want to say here, and I think you're going to talk a little bit more about it at the end, but you've got some papers that have actually been published about this in a journal called Safety Science. And in reading through that and preparing for the podcast here, you gave some pretty specific examples that people will recognize of organizations that had decentralized organizational structures and had very major impact. So can you just maybe just take a second to bring us to reality of this isn't just something hypothetical that we're worried about. This specific situation has actually caused great destruction. So can you like maybe bring a couple of those up?
Yeah, for sure. And it's good that you have mentioned that, because if the listeners get interested in this topic, I have published with Professor Andrew Hopkins two papers in Safety Science about this topic. So the papers are How Do Organizational Structures Impact Operational Safety? And in part one, the paper number one, we had some real examples that we used to discuss the potential dangers of a decentralized structure. And one of the examples was exactly a situation like that. You had a safety problem in two different process facilities that belonged to the same company. And the safety problems were being managed using completely different strategies. In one of the process facility, the situation was perceived as a change, and the MOC process, the management of change process, was used to handle that particular situation. So a risk analysis was performed and compensating measures were defined to handle the situation, the degraded state of some equipment during a certain period of time. In the second process facility, the same problem, a very similar problem, although there were some differences in design, but if you take the definition of change of this company, this situation should have been regarded as a change, should have been analyzed through a risk analysis process, but the comprehension of the situation was completely different and no MOC was open to the second process facility. And this was a situation that was identified by the regulator, so causing an interruption of production, so a very disturbing situation. And we can connect this case that I'm discussing and bring here as an example to the structure. Each one of the process facilities belonged, were part of different business units. So the way these business units comprehended the concepts of MOC, the process of MOC, was different. So that's what I'm trying to bring here, to emphasize here. It's almost inevitable in a decentralized company that you don't find variations in the practices and in the way the concepts established that the corporate center will be interpreted and even applied.
Well, I think that the issue, even in a centralized structure, where you've got very clear lines of authority and expectations from the top to the bottom, there's still the risk that corporate sends out a directive and the local facilities interpret them differently. But I think that that risk is magnified significantly the more decentralized it is, right? So the more decentralized you are, the more likely it is that something is going to be different from the way it comes from headquarters down to the local plant.
Exactly. And I think that there is a second point that I would like to emphasize here regarding the dangers of a decentralized structure, which is the issue of waivers to technical requirements. Okay, so suppose in your organization, you have an engineering functional division, a process safety division that is in charge for establishing, developing, maintaining, and enhancing internal technical standards, the technical requirements that will then be deployed in the process facilities. But in a decentralized structure, the plant manager, the business unit manager, may have the authority to decide whether a waiver to a particular technical requirement can be granted. And of course, that this manager has his or her own process safety professionals that will support him or her in this decision-making process. So probably these professionals will perform a risk analysis in order to better comprehend the risks of not following that particular technical requirement. But we have some problems within this context because these process safety professionals, they can perform this analysis sometimes even without even consulting the engineering division who had developed the standard, the technical requirement in the first place. So they will perform the risk analysis without consulting a more senior or experienced professional who knows exactly why that technical requirement was established. So they may lack the knowledge or the expertise to perform an effective risk analysis. But there is a second point. These process safety professionals, they are directly subordinated to this plant manager, to this business unit manager that I'm sure has a very strong and important reason, economical reason, for not following that technical requirement. So this puts this group under a lot of pressure. So this is a kind of context that when a safety issue is identified, no one wants to come to the conclusion that the associated risks are within the red area of the risk matrix. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So there are many arguments, many reasons, many logical reasoning that will be raised in order to justify, no, we're talking about a yellow risk, a moderate risk. We can go on, we can go further. And in the end, the whole risk analysis process is not used to support a decision, but to validate a decision that has already been made. Because these professionals, they may lack the independence that is required to perform an effective risk analysis. And you know, Rob, that when we have small groups having to decide under a lot of pressure, there are many social psychological mechanisms operating in this group. So we can think about confirmation bias, we can think about groupthink, and all of this can lead to flawed rationales that will support bad decisions. And I can give you an example from my personal experience that I think it's a good story for this point here.
Okay.
Once I was working, I was a corporate process safety professional. I was outside the business unit, okay? I was in a centralized safety function. I didn't answer to the business unit manager. And I had some colleagues of mine discussing with me and with some business unit managers and integrity managers a very complex problem that we were having in some process facilities. Okay. And some of that situations, we could continue the operations using some compensating measures. It was okay. But we had some cases that, in our opinion, we couldn't proceed. We couldn't continue operating that particular situation. We needed to stop and correct the integrity problem. And we had lots of discussions. I was with some process safety professionals that were outside the business area, and just one person was within the business area. So in the end, we realized that we couldn't achieve an agreement. So we decided to write a report explaining the reasons why we understood that we needed to stop in some situations. And we signed that report and we escalated the problem, which was excellent. And that's the beauty of a structure like that, because you have an independent view of the problem and you can escalate and the decision will have a better quality. But this person
And the escalation doesn't have to go up 16,000 levels to finally get to the top, right? And that's the whole idea with the centralized. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's perfect. The point that you were raising, because we need a dynamic that is compatible with the time pressure that we have to solve the problem. So sometimes just escalating one level is enough to solve the issue. But in this story that I'm telling you here, it's interesting to see that the only safety professional that was within the business unit, in the end, this person turned to us and said, I cannot sign this report. And I'm not comfortable in signing this report because I don't know what my business unit manager will think about me after that. And of course, Rob, you can think about many, many causes for this kind of behavior. You can think, oh, come on, what kind of culture does this business unit have? You can think about psychological safety and so on. But the fact is, those professionals who had more independence from the business unit pressures, they were more comfortable to perform their job. So that's what I want. That's what I'm suggesting here. I'm suggesting a kind of structure that increases the power of influence of technical people, a kind of structure that increases the deference to technical expertise in the decision-making processes. I think that's the beauty of the structure that we are suggesting here. It separates the authority from technical people and from managers who will be in charge for some business goals and from technical people who will be willing to pay a higher degree of attention to some process safety issues. That's the whole idea.
Okay, so I think that it's funny. I want to like write on a whiteboard, you know, so we can show people the different types of organizational structures. So I hope that folks will go and look at your papers because all that information is included in there. But to kind of paint a picture with my words that what you're talking about. So in a decentralized structure, your safety or your process safety people are kind of within the line management structure. So therefore, you know, it goes to the plant manager, maybe the business manager, and then some regional manager. And then, you know, eventually you end up at kind of like a top corporate level where somebody can say, hey, we've got a risk here, we've got a problem. So that's kind of the decentralized. And what you're suggesting is the better way to design an organization to strengthen the safety function is to have positions in the company that are responsible for this process safety or safety type functionality and have some sort of dotted line to an organization, a business unit, but also that have a more direct line to senior management through some sort of safety level higher up at the board or at the leadership level of the company. Did I kind of summarize that appropriately?
Yeah, that's perfect. And I think that I can try to better explain what kind of design, how to design the organization to strengthen the safety function. And we are talking here about a kind of design that combines two dimensions, two forms of departmentalizations, a functional one and a production one. And when we think about a structure like this, it comes to my mind a structure that we all know as a matrix. A matrix is a kind of collaborative arrangement that decentralized companies can use in order to centralize some critical functions such as process safety. And there is an important feature of a matrix structure, which is the dual reporting. So you have an employee with two reporting lines. So in this case, the suggested structure that we are discussing here, we would have a process safety professional who works in the process facility, who is embedded in the business unit. And this is a very important feature of this design, because this person will be the eyes and the ears of the process safety function. We need people interacting with those in charge for operations. We need people living the daily routine in the process facility and working as a kind of sense mechanism to identify dangers at the local level. So this person will be connected to the plant manager, to the business unit manager, through a dotted line that means a provision of services. And the second line, the second reporting line, would be the accountability line. So this safety professional would answer to a more senior process safety professional, a process safety manager, who wouldn't be within the business unit, but in a separated functional line that goes progressively all the way to the top of the organization. So this process safety manager is the one who selects this professional, who defines the goals to be pursued by this professional. And this professional has the authority to intervene every time he or she realizes that there is a decision that may compromise the safety of the process facility. And in case of any disagreement, this professional now can escalate the problem, but using this independent functional line that goes all the way to the top. So that's the idea of a more centralized process safety structure that provides more independence for technical people to perform their job. I think that's the idea. And there are some important aspects here, Rob, that I think it's important to emphasize. When I say that the safety function goes all the way to the top, we can think about the position occupied by the process safety head of this function. Mm-hmm. This guy must be directly reporting to the CEO, and we don't find this kind of structure. It's not a common structure, at least in oil and gas companies. Not all of them have this position at the very top of the organization. And this is a very important feature. Professor Hopkins always say that organizations that put a high value to process safety, they have someone at the very top of the company who is in charge for this function, because then we can escalate the problems until the very top of the company, and you can enhance the awareness of the executive level of the company regarding process safety. And of course, this is a very critical function to be fulfilled. this guy must have a very sound knowledge of process safety, technical knowledge, and also some important soft skills, leadership, the ability to handle conflicts, communication. He must be able, he or she must be able to communicate things with compelling arguments. And this person needs an understanding of the business context and the expectations of all the stakeholders. So it's not an easy function to be performed, and you need someone with these skills, in my opinion.
You need to have the right person up there. That's for sure. You know, a point that you make is hitting on another pet peeve of mine that we probably could spend another podcast talking about. But that is that, you know, over the last 30 or 40 years, the leadership in a company, and I come mainly from the chemicals side of things, so I can speak best to those. You know, the CEOs, the senior leadership tends, in the old days, I'll call them the old days, tended to be engineers, and they had an understanding. They probably came up through the facilities. They knew what process safety was. They knew the dangers inherent in their processes. And, you know, 2022, that's not the case. The people at the top did not come from operations or from engineering. They probably came from sales or marketing or finance, maybe HR. And those folks, some do, but it's certainly not a given that those folks understand what the hazards that their facilities are dealing with. So, you know, again, we could probably keep going with that. But even in the case where you had some sort of leadership that did not have a lot of experience, having at least one person at the top, like you're talking about, would be a huge upgrade versus kind of having all of that process safety expertise buried further down in the organization. So I think that'd be a great upgrade. So, okay. So I think we probably need to start wrapping up a little bit here. So I think we've made a bit of the argument of, you know, we've defined what a decentralized structure is, kind of what we think the dangers are, how we could improve things by modifying our organizational structure. But there's, you know, there are other things that would need to be in place to try to prevent a more centralized structure, even though it may be better than the decentralized structure, it can still fail. So what sorts of other things should we be considering that you maybe haven't already talked about?
Yeah, I think that's an important point, or in other words, what can make a more centralized structure fail? I think we have already talked about the position of the head of the safety function. And another important aspect that I think that leaders need to be aware of, this process safety function must be very well resourced. So we need a staff, we need an amount of people compatible with the workload. So if don't have the right amount of people, it will not work. And again, we need the right people with the right competences, sound knowledge of process safety, and some very important soft skills. And I would say that in terms of soft skills, again, the ability to communicate, to handle conflicts, but also the ability to think out of the box. I think it's a common expression, isn't it, Rob? Or in other words, the ability to come up with solutions and risk-based strategies to handle complex problems, strategies and solutions that have never been thought about. They are not written in our procedures, but this is the kind of problem that we are going to face. So we need people with this kind of adaptive thinking, this kind of people who have a multidisciplinary approach. They can make connections across different disciplines. So I think that's a point that we need to pay attention to if you want this structure to succeed. Another important point, Rob, that I would say, especially from what I have seen, is the communication process that leaders will adopt when performing the organizational redesign. So leaders must clearly communicate why is the company performing this organizational restructuring. What is the reason why the process safety function is changing? Why we are trying to work in a more centralized way to control the risks? So we have to put everybody on the same page. And before that, you need to have a very clear understanding about the roles and responsibilities. Who is responsible for what? Who is accountable? Who should be consulted in the decision-making processes? And who is going to be informed? So this must be previously defined and clearly communicated to everybody. So if you don't do that, after redesigning the process safety function, people will get very confused. They don't know who is responsible for what. They don't know who to turn to for answers. And the systems became chaotic. So this is a very important point. I know that it's common to every organizational change. And this is very important in this kind of restructuring, this kind of redesign change that we are talking here. And one last point, Rob, is that this communication process must have a part very focused on the process safety leaders. These leaders must clearly understand and accomplish their role. Because through what I have seen, when a company has been working at its centralized mode for a very long time, these process safety leaders, they got to use it to work within the business area, answering to the plant manager, to the business unit manager. So when you take these guys out of the business unit and grant them with authority to intervene, if it's not clear for them what is the role, what are the expectations about this new design, they won't feel comfortable in exerting this authority, even if it's necessary. So I have seen this before. So this is a very important point that leaders need to pay attention to, clearly define the expectations, what is expected from this process safety leaders. And finally, Rob, it's not only the communication process and everything is going to work as desired. You have other institutional arrangements that must be put together with the structure in order for the whole package to work in an intended way. So what do I mean by institutional arrangements? I mean all the arrangements that are defined by the top leaders of the company, arrangements that exist independent from us, individuals who are working the company. We barely think about these arrangements, but they highly influence on the way we behave. So when I say institutional arrangements, I talk about organizational structures, but also about other arrangements such as bonus systems. And this is my last point for today, because remuneration systems, they can really undermine any centralized structure that the company may put in place to control the risks. Depending on the remuneration systems, people will get huge incentives to accept higher risks in order to maximize value to the shareholder. And it's up to the board of the companies to set this centralized structure and to make it work. So the board needs to make the questions. What are the risks that we are accepting in order to maximize this annual return to the shareholders? I want to know. I want to know the bad news, because I need to know if this maximization of value that we are performing now in the short term is compromising the sustainability of the business in the long term. So if the board is not risk sensitive, and if the board do not pose this kind of question, you're going to have a bonus system that will weaken this centralized structure. So I think that's the last, but maybe one of the most important points to think about when you talk about this whole issue of organizational structure and the impacts on process safety.
Wow. There's a lot of gold in that list right there. I could kind of go into each one of these a little bit, but I guess that I want to just kind of underline two pieces of that to just reiterate from my own standpoint, which is that the person who you pick for these, or the people that you pick for these process safety leader roles, you talked about how difficult it will be for them, and how if these people are going from a decentralized to a more centralized role, as you're kind of outlining here, that is extremely difficult. Number one, it's difficult no matter what. But taking someone who was embedded within the business and has been a part of groupthink and a part of confirmation bias and all of those sorts of problems that you have, as well as just the thinking of, you know, production first, you know, shareholder value and all of that, it's tough to get out of that role. So I think that your point there is super key. And the other is related to pay, bonuses, et cetera. You can do anything you want, but as soon as it starts impacting somebody's pay, it's going to impact their behavior. So you can put whatever organizational structure you want in place, but until your bonus structure, your promotions, all of that line up with what you want this role to do and the importance of process safety, it's not going to succeed in the long term. So great list of things. I hope folks were taking notes. Okay, so I think we can say that we've wrapped that up pretty well. And before we kind of head out of here, I guess I was wondering, do you have any advice or resources? I know we mentioned the papers you've done, so definitely put those out there where people can find them. So do you have any advice or resources that you can suggest for the folks who are listening to the podcast? You know, most of the people listening, they're lower in organizations. They don't have the power to change their organizational structure. But maybe they want to alert senior management to the dangers that we've discussed. Maybe there's something they want to do. They want to pass on some information. So do you have any advice or resources that those sorts of folks can use?
Yeah, besides the papers that I have mentioned before, there is a book from Professor Andrew Hopkins that I highly recommend. So if you want to know a little bit more about this topic, this is a must-read book, Organizing for Safety, How Structure Creates Culture. So this is definitely the best resource people will have to understand this topic. And regarding advice, Rob, what I would say is people must be aware that there is no one-fits-all solution. So here I tried to point out some design features that can help organizations to strengthen safety, but this is not a recipe, then you follow step one, two, three, and everything is going to work as desired. So I think that here we provided the listeners with a lot of food for thought that people need to take now to reflect upon these things and think about, okay, how is my organizational structure? What are the vulnerable points that I can have here? What are the changes that we could perform that could strengthen safety based on what was said here? But the idea that there is no one-fits-all solution, it's a very important one. And remember, we cannot have the illusion that we just reorganize, redesign everything, and all the problems are solved. Structures does not exist in isolation. There are many other institutional arrangements that need to be thought together with the structures for the whole package to work as intended. We have addressed one of them, which is bonus systems, but we need to pay attention to the many organizational factors that can impact the functioning of this structure.
Okay, great advice. Thank you very much for that and for everything that you've mentioned here. And thank you for being on the podcast. If people are interested in learning more about you, they want to reach out to you, whatever, how can they do that?
I think that they can connect with me at LinkedIn. So using my name, searching for my name, Gilsa Monteiro, they can connect with me and it will be a pleasure to share more information, exchange ideas with them.
Okay, great. And we'll have the book, links to the papers that you published, as well as your LinkedIn profile. We'll have that in the show notes. So podcast listeners, what do you think about the ideas that we've discussed here? Do you disagree with what we've talked about? Do you have any examples of how organizational structure has impacted process safety in your company or one that you've worked for? Is there something that you can commit to today to improve process safety in your organization after listening to Gilsa? I think as she mentioned, we can all reflect on what is going on in our organizations and try to think of how we can improve them. Whatever you're thinking, I'd love to hear about it. Send us a voicemail using the link in our episode description, or you can always shoot us an email at podcasts@amplifyconsultants.com. And finally, our goal at Amplify is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems, as it's our firm belief that these systems will help to prevent catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic releases. Please don't hesitate to reach out to us if there's anything we can do to help you on your process safety journey. Thanks again, Gilsa, for joining us today. And thank you all for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.